Transitions from breathing in to breathing out and back again. One can also look at the extremes of the process or the breathing as a whole. I invite you to focus for a moment at that point where the out-breath ends, at that brief moment where there is a stillness before the in-breath begins. Try it. Breathe out and breathe in your own timing. As our Transylvanian hymn said earlier, find a stillness. Breathe out and breathe in. Breathe out and breathe in. Noticing that moment of stillness. Physician and writer Rachel Naomi Remen taught a group of medical and nursing and chaplain students, of which I was a part, this focusing on the moment when the out-breath ends as a form of meditation to help find an inner stillness as well, even in the midst of hurry and scurry, of daily bustle, or of crisis, finding that stillness. For me, Saradan's song, the meditation on breathing that we were just singing, often helps me find a center point again. When I served as a chaplain resident at Johns Hopkins Hospital last year, I learned that the long hallway from the old buildings to the new buildings is basically two verses long sung slowly. Sometimes I sung it in my mind, and sometimes I sang it quietly out loud. The whole process of breathing involves transitions as the muscles engage or relax, the lungs fill and empty, and the air, as Mary Oliver describes it, the invisible gift, our purest sweet necessity, goes in and out. She says everything needs it, bones, muscles, and even while it calls the earth its home, our soul. The air connects us with others, for the air you breathe out joins the air I breathe in, and it connects us all to one another. The poem goes on, you are breathing patiently. It is a beautiful sound. It is your life, which is so close to my own. I do not know where to drop the knife of separation. And what has this to do with love except everything? The whole process of breathing is a process of transitions. At the same time, it is ongoing. I find this true also of life and of love. I've been thinking a lot about transitions recently. I've been going through quite a bit of them. In the last 5 years, I've moved 4 times and started new jobs 5 times. In my ordination, joyfully celebrated with this congregation in the fall, we created a ritual of transition, as well as forming a covenant between congregation and new minister. At that same time, the ordination was part of all the being and becoming that I had already done and will continue to do. Transitions surround me. My closest friend from grade school brought her new baby to that ordination, and my father braved the increasing physical limitations of his Parkinson's to be here. Rituals, milestones mark transitions. They also help the person or community going through the transitions, for all transitions involve loss and disorientation and hope and new beginnings, all of them. A longed-for, hard-worked-for change still involves saying goodbye to the familiar, and a change sudden and heart-wrenching contains seeds for growth, however unwelcome their arrival. My sister shared a quote with me from Dr. Remen's book, My Grandfather's Blessings. Fear is the friction in transitions. Fear of the unknown, fear of loss. When I looked up the quote, typing in R-E-M-E-N into Google, it also brought up the option West Virginia Access Ramp Angle Requirement, since requirement contains R-E-M-E-N. I had made that search as part of the ongoing decision-making process of whether to build a ramp or install an elevator for my father to be able to enter and exit my parents' house when he can no longer climb the porch steps. Fear of the unknown and fear of loss. I can find it difficult to say when a transition begins and ends. A move seems straightforward enough. You're either living in one place or you're living in another. But when does the move start? When you decide to move? The first packing of a box? The day when my nephews and friends help move boxes out? When the movers move the biggest, heaviest objects? And when have we moved? With the arrival of the first box? The last box? The first room that got cleared of all boxes? And when, or maybe even when all the boxes are entirely unpacked, in which case I haven't entirely finished moving from Philadelphia 20 years ago. There are still one or two boxes that, while partially excavated, have made it across the country twice. On the other hand, those boxes are still useful. Two of them provided notes for this sermon. I can get caught up in expecting ends and beginnings, waiting for an end, so in that classic Cinderella phrase, and then you can go to the ball, or expecting a beginning to magically start rather than my having to join in and have it start. And this can happen in something as simple as a move to a new home, or as important as a movement for social justice. For all that history is often told as giant individuals who start and finish monumental changes, movements flow out of a myriad of actions, of efforts, of setbacks, changes, steps forward, tragedies and victories that flow from one to another. I once saw a performance of Zhu Tamai, which I'm hoping I'm pronouncing correctly. It's a classical style of traditional dance with very slow, subtle spiritual movements. It's an intimate dance form, traditionally danced by women, when most classical Japanese dance is performed by men. It expresses emotions, joys, sorrows, through fluid, minimized movements and the intricate use of fans or parasols. The performance I saw contained two dances. The first one was by a student already well advanced. She had finished her apprenticeship and was now working towards being a master. And the second dance was danced by Yo Izuma, an acknowledged master and the student's teacher. With the student, she would have long, slow movements The parasol would open, pause, open again, and I'm doing it far faster than she did. It required, from this American modern dancer's perspective, an exquisite control and subtle intensity I only hoped for. And then Yo Izumo danced. A slow shift of a hand, a stillness, another shift. The grief of this courtesan. And I knew that here danced a master, and at first I couldn't tell you why. And then I realized that while she danced, there was no transitions. It was not movement, transition, movement. Even the stillnesses were danced. And in a dance where there were no transitions, the whole dance was transitions. All of it flowing one to another. If life could be experienced this way, or perhaps when one experiences life this way, moving through life not as a series of transitions with chunky starts and beginnings and ends, how would that affect how you experience life? Loss and grief would not go away, nor joy and excitement, nor the love flowing through it. They permeate life. And even fear wouldn't entirely go away, that friction in transitions. But perhaps some of the stuckness would. And that growing fear that builds up in stuck places. Perhaps some of the expectations of perfection, either within ourselves or in our goals, would go away, and we could simply do things, knowing that change was happening always. Recently, when reading an article by sociologist Arthur Frank called Finding Ways to Hope and Seeing Beauty, I found him describing how his parents lived with ongoing transitions. In the article, Frank questioned the dichotomy of denial and acceptance, or even a prescribed journey from denial to acceptance as a person or a loved one faces a potentially terminal illness. To Frank, as he described his experience with his parents during the 9 months before his mother died, these concepts simply weren't applicable. Because rather than accepting dying, what he saw was the two of them persevering to live in the imminence of death. His father wasn't in denial. He was fully aware of death. But he would not have called this the period of her dying. Rather, the two of them focused on what he called an affirmation of life as it remained. By persevering, they lived each day, as his father described it, with their temporal horizon narrowed to each tomorrow. Affirming life as it remains both narrows their temporal horizon and expands it so that each day holds possibility and value. Echoing Blake's line, to see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wildflower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. When reading Frank's narrative, I recognized how my parents are persevering. Health-wise, they are not where Frank's mother was, but I'm now more aware of how they affirm life as it remains. I, the palliative care chaplain, have this fall entertained somewhat grandiose plans of going through piles of papers with my mother, hoping to use them as a springboard for what we call in the business legacy work. Telling stories of the past, affirming what my mother's done in the community and at home, of which I know there's a lot more than I remember or perhaps ever knew. My mother saw some old piles of paper that aren't particularly in her way, and there wasn't any urgent need to sort them. She preferred that we clean out the kitchen closet. After all, she's been hoping to do it for some time, she'll see the practical results every day, several times a day, and actually be a person who will savor that sight. And it will help her in other practical ways as she goes about the daily business of being the linchpin of the family. And yes, we cleaned out the closet, and the piles continue to gather a little more dust. For her and for my father, I sense the goal of living life at the fullest now. About a year ago, they discovered that they love reading out loud to one another, and sometimes this fall I joined in. When I could most be in the moment, I heard the story, and even more, I heard the reader's voice. The voice connected past and future, too, with echoes of the other times I've listened to it layered on top, and the knowledge that there will be a time when I do not hear it anymore layered on as well. But in this moment, savoring the sound of the voice. Sometimes this awareness of life being a continual flow of change, of living in the midst of transitions, arises when a person actively seeks to cultivate it. Other times, events and experiences wake us. When I hear David, our minister here, as he's preaching, sometimes even as he's speaking to a committee or to a person, I hear these days the urgency of what he believes is important: justice, compassion, and our common faith. A vulnerability he has been willing to share, at times an impatience with the trivial or petty, and an openness to love and to sharing love with us, with the people of this city, and with people everywhere. This isn't saintliness. It is more a sense of aliveness. When he called me and said his former congregation invited him to lead their service today, I thought it was important that we share with them that voice, that awakening. It is an awakening that each of us can experience. We don't have to wait for a crisis or a wake-up call or even for the move to be finished. We are in the midst of the air all the time. Breathe in and open yourself to the invisible gift, our purest sweet necessity of change. Blessed be.